Good evening, this is your host, Mr. Dark, bringing you a series of some of the most terrifying, strange, and true short horror stories of crimes, murders, abductions, and experiences. You're listening to the Dark Side Diaries podcast. The disappearance of TV anchor Jody Huizentrout. Jody Huizentrout was a producer and news anchor for The Daybreak, a morning newscast at KIMT-TV in Mason City, Iowa. Originally from Long Prairie, Minnesota, Jody excelled at golf throughout high school, where she was a member of the state champion golf team. In college, she studied mass communications and speech communication, where she graduated with a bachelor's degree. Jody began her broadcasting career with CBS affiliate KGAN in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, as the station's Iowa City bureau chief. She would find herself returning to Minnesota at ABC affiliate KSAX in Alexandria for a brief time, only to return later to Iowa for her position at CBS affiliate KIMT in Mason City, which would be her last anchor position. Jody was well-liked in Mason City, Iowa. She had moved there in 1993 and became an active member of the community, which is what made her disappearance even stranger. On the morning of Tuesday, June 27th, 1995, something would happen to Jody. She was supposed to be at work around 4 a.m. to anchor the morning newscast. As Jody overslept, her coworker Amy Coons called her and woke her up. Amy did not notice anything wrong and said Jody had gotten up at that point and started to get ready for work as they talked. Jody stated she would be in shortly. 6 a.m. would come, and there was no sign of Jody at the studio that morning. So Amy filled in for her on the morning show Daybreak. And by 7 a.m., the KIMT staff called the Mason City Police for a wellness check on Jody. When the police arrived, officers found a number of Jody's personal possessions strewn all over the parking lot, including her purse, hairspray, hair dryer, and a pair of red high-heeled shoes. Jody would usually carry these items back and forth to work in a canvas tote bag. The key to Jody's car was found bent inside the lock on the driver's side door, and this is where Mason City Police Lieutenant Frank Stern said he found drag marks visible on the rain-soaked pavement. Screams were heard by her neighbors, but the apartment building was located near a campground, and investigators dismissed them as nothing more than noisy campers. A neighbor also reported seeing a white van parked with its lights on, an engine running in the parking lot near Jody's apartment at about the same time, but the van was never positively identified. The day before her disappearance, Jody played in a golf tournament, and the last person to see her alive was her friend John Van Sice. Van Sice told authorities that she had stopped by his house that evening to watch a homemade videotape of her birthday celebration from earlier that month and became a person of interest with Jody's disappearance. In September 1995, Jody's family hired private investigators and would give the case national attention when the story aired on America's Most Wanted and Unsolved Mysteries. With the airing of these shows, they did generate several leads, but none would result in concrete evidence or ID a suspect. In May 1996, around 100 volunteers searched an area near Jody's apartment, but no promising evidence was found. Her disappearance prompted one of the largest manhunts in Iowa's history. One of the few main person of interest investigated was Tony Jackson. In 1997, Jackson was charged with raping several women in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. He later landed on police radar as a possible person of interest in Jody's case. Jackson was living in Iowa when Jody disappeared, but just two blocks from where she worked at TV station KIMT. In an interview, a former jailmate of Jackson's alleged that Jackson had written rape song lyrics possibly indicating that Jody was buried near a farm silo in Tiffin, Iowa. The lyrics included something about once abducting and killing an anchor woman. Cadaver dogs searched the area due to the content of some of the lyrics, but nothing incriminating was ever found. With no new breaks in the case and Jody's disappearance remaining unsolved, she was declared legally dead in May 2001. In June 2008, a copy of Jody's personal journal was sent to a Mason City Globe Gazette reporter. The journal contained more than 80 pages, where Huizentrout spelled out her personal goals. Further investigation revealed the former police chief's wife was the one that sent the copy to the Globe Gazette, and nobody understood the motive as to why the woman had sent it to the newspaper. The investigation into Jody's disappearance continues and is an active case being worked on by the Mason City Police Department and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Jody would write in an excerpt from her journal in January 1994, "Live with passion daily. Be passionate in everyday life. Live the way I want to live. Be generous, kind." The Giggling Granny, Nanny Doss. Nanny Doss had a love for reading the pulp magazine True Romance, and she spent much of her life searching for the real romance of life. However, Doss had a strange way of ending the relationship when she didn't find the true love affair she was after. Doss would kill them, and later it would show just how sadistic she truly was. Doss had a hard childhood. Born in 1905 in Blue Mountain, Alabama, Doss was one of five children. Her father was controlling, where he forced his children to work on the family farm instead of attending school. Doss would suffer from this with her schooling. When she was 7 years old, she suffered a head injury while riding a train, and she would have pain for years with severe headaches, blackouts, and depression. While growing up, Doss enjoyed reading her mother's romance magazines, and she dreamed about having her own romantic love affair in the future. Doss's father would interfere with this fantasy, forbidding her and her sisters from wearing makeup, attractive clothing, and from going to dances or social events, as he did not want them to be molested by random men. But that wouldn't matter still, because Doss was molested by many local men by the time she was in her mid-teens. At the age of 16 in 1921, Doss was married after 4 months of dating and with her father's approval. Her new husband was Charlie Braggs, a co-worker at a linen factory. In the first 5 years of the marriage, they would have 4 children together. With the stress of having 4 young children together, Doss became addicted to drinking and smoking. In 1927, the 2 middle children would die mysteriously from food poisoning, only months apart from each other. Suspicious of Doss, Braggs would divorce her. In 1929, Doss would find her second husband, Frank Harrelson, in Georgia, and they would settle down in Jacksonville, Alabama, with Doss's 2 other daughters, Florine and Melvina. The next chain of events were pretty disturbing, as Doss would seek to kill once again. In 1943, Melvina, Doss's daughter, now 16 years old, gave birth to a son named Robert, and in 1945, to a daughter. The daughter would soon die afterwards mysteriously, as the doctors couldn't explain why. But Melvina saw Doss with a hat pin in her hand and swore Doss stuck the pin into the baby's head. No evidence was found, though, to prove this. The same year, Melvina would be visiting her father, and she left her son Robert in Doss's care. Robert would die 3 days in Doss's care, and his death was diagnosed as asphyxia due to unknown causes. But Doss would claim that Robert accidentally got a hold of some rat poison. 2 months later, Nanny would collect the $500 life insurance that she took out on her grandson. That same year in September, Doss's husband, Harrelson, was out drinking. When he got home, he had raped Doss, and that was her last straw. The next day, she would lace Harrelson's whiskey with rat poison, and he would die painfully that evening. Nothing would be found of Doss poisoning him, and she would eventually meet and marry her third husband, Arlie Lanning, from the Lonely Hearts column, within 3 days of meeting him. He was an alcoholic womanizer, and Doss would disappear for months on end. During the marriage in 1950, Doss would visit her bedridden sister, who mysteriously died under her care. The same year, on September 7th, Doss poisoned her husband's mother and made it look as if she had died in her sleep. With the marriage at its endpoint in 1952, it was supposedly heart failure that would lead to her husband Lanning's death. Afterwards, when the house Doss and Lanning lived in burned to the ground, it allowed Doss to collect the insurance money on it. The home was originally left to Lanning's sister, and had it survived, it would have gone to her. Doss decided to look for yet another husband and joined a dating service called the Diamond Circle Club. She would meet her 4th husband, Richard Morton, and they'd marry in 1952 in Emporia, Kansas. While this husband wasn't an alcoholic, he was a womanizer, and this marriage wouldn't last long with her poisoning and murdering him in May of 1953. A few months prior to this, though, Doss would poison and murder her mother, Louisa, when she came to live with them. About a month after her 4th husband's death in June 1953, she would marry her 5th and last husband, Samuel Doss. He was a Nazarene minister who had lost his family to a tornado in Madison County, Arkansas. In September, Samuel was admitted to the hospital with flu-like symptoms, where they diagnosed Samuel with a severe digestive tract infection. He would be released from the hospital on October 5th, only to suddenly die a few days later. Doss herself, being impatient, killed him that evening in a rush to collect the two life insurance policies she had taken out on him. He would be released from the hospital on October 5th, only to suddenly die in her care. Doss herself, being impatient, killed him that evening in her rush to collect the two life insurance policies she had taken out on him. With the sudden death, the doctor drew suspicion and ordered an autopsy. Inside his system was enough arsenic to have killed a horse, and Doss was quickly arrested. Doss confessed that she had indeed murdered her husband, as well as claiming responsibility for killing other people in her family. In total, she had murdered four of her husbands, two of her children, two of her grandchildren, her sister, her mother, and a mother-in-law. The prosecution found her mentally fit for trial, and Doss would plead guilty on May 17, 1955. She was sentenced to life imprisonment, but the state did not pursue the death penalty due to her gender. Doss was never charged with the other deaths. She died of leukemia in the hospital ward of the Oklahoma State Penitentiary in 1965. During her trial, journalists gave her the nickname Giggling Granny because every time she would tell the story of how she killed her late husbands, she laughed. This concludes our episode of the Dark Side Diaries. Please remember to follow, like, share, and subscribe for future episodes.
Want to get seven streaming services for the price of one? Sign up for a smart bundle that'll stimulate your brain. Featuring Curiosity Stream with the best documentary films and TV shows. Nebula for thought-provoking content from your favorite creators. And One Day University with the best lectures from the country's top professors. And so much more. It's perfect for families with all kinds of interests and great content for kids. It also makes a perfect holiday gift. Now at 40% off, get all seven services for only $3.50 a month. Sign up now at smartbundle.com.